Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. What's going on, everybody?
Is this for Rowdy Piper?
Yeah, it's for Rowdy Piper.
I like this. Start with a tribute. Rowdy Piper. Open the doors and a wrestling tribute to one of the legends of the WWE, yeah. Correct? May I? That was awesome.
I'm sure everyone's heard, you know, Rowdy passed on Friday.
He passed last week, and you actually used to have a wrestling podcast, right?
I did.
And you told me, you know, he was like one of the nicest people that you'd ever
met. He's absolutely one of the nicest celebrity, wrestler, actor people you would ever want to meet.
And he was like the best antagonist for
wrestling.
Oh, he's
the greatest heel of all time, the best talker.
I used to be scared of him as a little kid. I'd be like, dude, he's bad.
There would be no Hogan without Piper.
Yeah, no, of course.
Without an enemy, without a great
bad guy. Wasn't
he
the leader in the cartoon of
the Rock and Wrestling?
Yeah, that's right.
There would have been no WrestleMania.
But then he went good. He kind of like crossed over.
Because he was so bad, people loved him.
That's true.
Like, he was such a great talker.
We got to make you good.
People. But he's just like, he was just genuinely...
And he passed it like a cardiac arrest or something like that, right?
Yeah, attack while he was sleeping.
I'm so sorry, man.
He's only 61.
Yeah, that's probably...
I mean, I wasn't super tight with him. I mean, our friend Steve Simone we had on a few weeks ago, they were like good friends.
Oh, wow.
But like, I'd met him a couple times and I'd worked with him a couple times and he was just like...
Humble, down to earth and all that?
Yeah. Just insane. Like,
and he did a lot for the sport. He actually created a lot of the hype around the sport.
Yeah, he was amazing. And he was so funny and so talented and just like, it's just really sad.
Well, that's a bummer.
So young, too.
That was a good tribute. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, yeah.
Well, how was your week, man?
Well, it was, you know.
It was a bummer because of that.
But
did you wear, like, a little kilt or anything?
No. If I had a kilt, I would have wore it.
Well, maybe something will come for you this Christmas.
I play with my bagpipes, though.
Yeah, that must have been a bummer. Did you watch any old cartoons? I'm sure you did some ritual where you watched old footage. I watched some old interviews of his that I thought were awesome. Like, you know, like, you remember the screens that he would stand in front of and just, he would talk shit, you know, to all the, you know, the good guys, basically. I watched a couple of those just to be like, you know what? He was great for what he did for that sport.
The stories he would tell about just the way wrestling.
What is a story that he would tell? Let's share something. Give us the goods, man.
So many. There were so many that kind of all bleed together. I don't really remember them. But that's what his act was. I mean,
that was a terrible segue. I like gave you the alley-oop and you were like, nah, I don't want to play anymore.
Because I don't want to butcher his stories. I don't want to butcher them. They were so...
Well, what was... Give us a small little, like, you know, give us a little fever pitch.
There was one where because wrestling was so territorial back in the day before it, you know, when there was so many territories of wrestling. Now it's just one WWE. But back then, like, the very territorial people really fought. And, like, he was in one territory where it was, I think, Mr. Fuji.
Oh, yeah.
Was like,
oh, my God.
He was like the Asian guy
yep.
in that territory. And then another guy came in to be, was sort of competing with that. You can't have two Asian guys. And, like, he invited him over for dinner. Or Mr. Fuji apparently invited the other guy over for dinner and fed him this spaghetti dinner or whatever. I forgot what he made. And then at the end of the meal, found out that the guy's dog was the meal.
Oh, my God.
And told him to, like, get out. You know, that's how
people... That's crazy.
I know. But, like, that's what it was like back then. It was so territorial.
The 80s. That's what happens when everybody's on cocaine.
Yeah, you think Games of Thrones was big.
Did you see any movies? Did you see any movies this weekend? Did you see Ant-Man?
Saw Mission Impossible.
What did you think? I saw that too. Let's talk.
I was impressed with that
stunt that Tom Cruise where he's like actually on the plane, the opening scene.
That one didn't freak me out as much as the motorcycle.
The motorcycle was crazy too.
Well, the plane thing, he's strapped on there.
Dude, you know what though? You know, like, my girlfriend said the same thing. It doesn't matter. Like, you're flying that high, anything can happen.
He's still strapped on. The motorcycle, he's in control of that motorcycle at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's true.
The airplane, he's just kind of like, okay, strap me on as tight as I can,
yeah, but, and let's see what happens. Something happens, he's done. He's done.
You're dead either
way. Same, yeah, you're
dead. But the motorcycle, he's driving that thing. He's weaving in and out of traffic.
I was actually impressed with a lot of the stunts and that he was doing
the motorcycle things were just, like, I can't believe he was doing that.
Yeah, that was crazy. I was really impressed that he was doing those stunts at his age, too.
Well, apparently I heard one of my friends read an interview or something with the Simon Pegg. And apparently Simon Pegg during the car chase scene, like Simon Pegg was like, okay, when are they going to put the stunt driver in? And the the stunt coordinator was like, Tom's the best driver on set.
Wow.
There's no stunt driver better than Tom. So that's why.
So he did all the driving?
He does everything.
Wait, even the huge launch that's in the...
I don't know about the jump thing.
Okay, because that was pretty gnarly.
There might not have been anyone alive in that car. That could have just been like...
Just a car launching?
Yeah, launched a car, but...
There were a lot of great stunts and a lot of good scenes, and I actually thought it was one of my favorite Mission Impossibles.
It was fun, yeah.
The first one's still my favorite.
I didn't see Ghost Protocol. I didn't see the last one.
That was okay. It was good. I mean, there were some good things about it. Like 3 and 4, I didn't really love. This was the 6th one, right?
5th.
5th one. Okay, yeah. This one was, for me, this one was my second favorite. The first one's the best, and then this one was
the second. Alec Baldwin was funny in it.
Yeah, he was great. I thought it was a good cast. It was a good story. Yeah. Like, you know, I always have to roll my eyes a little bit when I see a Tom Cruise movie. Like, oh, this is going to be so over the top. It's going to be a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, but I mean, most of his movies are like that. Have you seen Night and Day? Like, that's like, really? There's scenes that were like, it's like, come on. Like, this is, like, I love going to the movies and escaping from whatever and just getting into that world. But sometimes you just got to be like, come on. This is crazy. But anyways, there were some great, car chases. And there was even some good, you know, dialogue and scenes, I thought.
Alec Baldwin was like, you've just set back relations between the U.S. and England to revolutionary times.
Yeah, he's good in everything.
Yeah, he was good.
Oh, that's awesome. Next one. My dog he's become like a scoundrel. He is like taking toilet paper and running all over the house like a madman.
You have a puppy.
Yeah, you know what? He got out of his crate the other day.
Yeah.
Like, he's like Houdini.
They'll do that.
Like, literally, I think I have to put like a humongous padlock. You know, and the funny thing is, like, he did something that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he just did it. We put him back in the crate to see how he got out, and he went for the lock right away and then realized we were all staring and pretended like he didn't know how to do it. I was like, you're good. You're real good. He's also playing possum, like, where he pretends he's asleep, and then we think he's asleep, and then he goes and runs him up.
Dogs are smart. They're as smart as, I think, 3-year-olds.
He's on it, man. I'm definitely I'm getting payback for my youth that I did to my parents. Anyways, we have an exciting guest. She's just walked in, Miss Victoria Namkung. How are you? Did I say your last name correct?
I did. You said it perfect.
I've actually never said your last name directly to your face before.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
So, Victoria, I'm going to just give you a huge shout out real quick. Victoria is one of my favorite people on the planet. She is awesome. She is one of the most loving, one of the most cool, down-to-earth, one of the funniest, one of the most clever people I know. And she just wrote her first novel. So we have our first novelist as a guest. Our studio audience loves that. Yes. No, so you know what? Let's just jump right into it. You're an awesome person. Let's know more about you. How did you get the bug to write?
Oh my gosh. So when I was a kid, I think around 12, I really wanted to join like a school paper, but we didn't have that in elementary school.
Because, yeah.
Because, you know, it's elementary kids.
Because you're just learning to write.
The last thing they want to do is read.
Exactly.
Outside of class.
When I got to junior high, I had a little trouble in my English class. And my teacher actually told my parents that if I didn't get help, I was going to be in serious trouble.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
What kind of problem?
Well, I guess, you know, I was just falling a little behind. And I had skipped kindergarten, so I tried to blame it on that. Like,
I was 8 years ago in kindergarten.
Very advanced when I was really young.
You're like, I don't need these ABCs. I can do this.
So we had trouble reading or
not reading,
writing?
Just my writing. She didn't think my writing was up to par.
So, oh,
yeah.
You showed her. Yeah. You should just send her a little email like, hey, by the way, I just published my first novel.
Like creatively writing or just?
Yeah, just like essays in class, essays in seventh grade. So my mom signed me up for this UCI writers camp that would go on. So
and you're like, oh, mom!
Yeah, so I wasn't like, I mean, I always kind of wanted to be a writer, but then being told I needed help with writing, like, wasn't helping.
Are there windows at writers
camp? That's not inspiration. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so I went to this class, and this really cool college kid was teaching it, and he taught us all about, you know, who, what, when, where, why, the five W's of journalism. And I started writing, and I started loving it. And I think, you know, just combined with growing up a little that summer, I came back to eighth grade.
You're like, I won't blow up the school. It'll be cool when I come back.
So it was great. It was actually, so I do have to give some credit to the seventh grade teacher, who's unfortunately no longer with us, or I would have sent her a copy of my novel.
Yeah. Well, you could send her children. There's exactly. There's always a legacy.
But yeah, so that was sort of my first foray. And then in high school, I was, you know, in the yearbook, and I would write articles for the school paper and stuff like that. So I knew from a pretty early age there was never anything else I wanted to
do. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you go to college for journalism?
No, so I went to college at UC Santa Barbara. Okay. So I went to college for partying. And
smart girl. Isla Vista, that was like the place.
And it was the height of Isla Vista. You know, now UCSB is like a top tier school that I would
never
be able to
get into. I'm not sure I could get into that school.
No, I'm not sure. I mean, I definitely couldn't get into that school now. But back then, it was still very wild. And, you know, Halloween and, like, all those parties outside and stuff. So somehow in there, I managed to focus a little bit on school. And I took a magazine writing class. So they didn't have a journalism major, but I took a magazine writing class with this professor named George Yacheson, who I still think about because I learned, like, everything I needed to know to then go into pitching a magazine.
What's a magazine writing class?
I was going to ask the same question.
Isn't that mostly pictures?
So they teach
Well, how
you,
is
like,
the writing different? That's
okay,
what I
so
ask.
Like, you know, when you open a magazine, you know, it could be any magazine. There's a variety of types of stories in there.
And lots
so you
of
might
pictures.
Have Q&A, photo essays, short little blurbs, you know, a guide for events, you know, whatever it is. So we learned how to break down all those sections and how you would approach that. And he had us go on mock interviews and do stories with people. So I profiled, like, a local janitor, I remember, and I just, like, we
That's
just had
cool.
to go up to the first person we saw and say, can I do a story on you for my class? So I kind of learned interviewing skills and, like, what you guys do, you know, just how to be comfortable with
We're
people.
Still learning.
I have no idea.
We gong each other quite a bit.
So, yeah, so I had some clips from college then, and I wrote an essay for our college paper. And then I went on to grad school at UCLA, and that sort of opened things up a lot because now I was in LA where there were actually some magazines based here, and I got an internship at LA Magazine. And
I know that magazine.
That
How many magazines exist in LA today?
Now there's
two?
Not
no,
very
three?
Many.
No, there's more. There's a lot of new ones. Surprisingly, there's new ones that sprout up.
Yeah.
Because it still has a thing. It still has a thing. You'd think everything's online.
I see a lot of free magazines, but I don't see like...
Well... I mean, a lot of publications are losing because they don't have the budgets because people aren't...
The heyday's over.
Everything's online now.
Yeah.
It's online magazines.
Yeah. But back then, you know, LA Magazine was like a huge deal. So it was just incredible. And my editors were so nice that, you know, they trusted me and started letting me actually do small stories. So I was like 21 and getting clips in this pretty sizable
That's awesome.
Magazine. Yeah. So that built my confidence.
In the big city.
In
Come
the big
on.
City,
right?
I was so excited to move here. I moved here the week that the Kenneth Starr report came out,
Ooh,
the Monica
wow.
Lewinsky. So it was like a really exciting time.
Yeah.
And I remember at LA Magazine, they said, you know, the internet was even new. And it was like, you are not to read the Kenneth Starr report while you're in this office because it would take up too much bandwidth if we were all online at the same time. It wasn't because they
the
didn't want us to read anything. Yeah. So I remember having to go home
Feed the hamster.
And dial up an AOL, and I read it at home, and I was just, like, enthralled by it all. And, yeah, and there were just a couple of us, one girl from USC, and I was from UCLA, and we just worked there for free and got our clips. And then I ended up working there part-time the whole time I was in grad school as a fact checker. So then I learned about sort of, like, you know, even the most
making
basic
sure
things.
Making sure things were legit.
Yeah, making sure things are right. And, you know, a perfect example of fact-checking is, like, someone could say, you know, write something like, oh, okay, Tupac Shakur has this, you know, large tattoo on his stomach, let's say. Well, you have to actually physically find a picture of him to verify that that's true. It doesn't matter if you just saw the video 10 minutes ago on MTV. It's like your mind can play tricks on you. So that was one example I remember where it was like, you know, no, it was really on the chest or something like that. So,
and do you have to call his people and like
back
ask
then,
the questions?
There
that
was
are...
no Google in the office.
Right.
So I remember one time Richard Reardon was the mayor when I started, and there was something about the mayor, and they said, you actually have to call his office. And I said, I don't want to call his office. It was something about his favorite restaurant. being, you know, somewhere downtown like Philippe's or something like that. So I actually had to call his assistant and say, is it true that the mayor's favorite restaurant? Whereas now you would probably just be able to find that online in a Wikipedia or in an article. But yeah, I mean, fact-checking was a great basis because even today I still take it very seriously. Even if I'm writing something very light-hearted, it's like, you know, you want to get it right.
You've kind of been on all sides of the gun then.
That's rare for a journalist nowadays.
Yeah.
Most people just write stuff and then they check it later.
Well, with blogs, there's no time. Yeah, there's no fact-checkers anymore. So if, even if I just, like, I just wrote an essay for the Washington Post and, I mean, that was not fact-checked, you know. It's like I have to do my own fact-checking even on my own piece.
Wow.
Or I've even at times, if it's for a really big story, I've even had somebody else fact-check it for me, or I'll have someone else copy-edit it for like $20.
The lack of fact-checkers is what's wrong with the world.
I've never even heard that that's like a thing.
It is a thing.
That's like an important part of the process,
it
too.
It is, yeah.
That's the problem with blogs and the whole internet.
Exactly.
Well, because like, it's all bullshit. No, it's all opinions.
It's all
opinions. Yeah, none of that is checked.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And opinions loud
enough.
So
what was
true.
The first story that they were like, all right, Victoria, we're giving you this. You
oh
run with this.
You're going to die. Okay. All right. Imagine a world before Ryan Seacrest was like dominating everything. Okay, so imagine when Ryan Seacrest just had a condo in Brentwood, two streets over from mine. So I had seen him in the area, and he was on Star 98.7 at the time.
Yeah,
so he was kind of a big
deal
with that,
for the ride
but
home.
He was not
That's
known
right.
outside of
yeah,
LA, you know. So we were doing this roundup of like the sexiest things in LA, which again, you might not think Seacrest, but all these women had written
Eddie
in,
does.
And
Eddie
they
definitely
really
does.
Wanted us to cover Ryan. So I brought that to my editor. I said, you know, we're getting these submissions that ladies want, and they want to see what he looks like. Because, again, this is not the day of YouTube and all this. So a lot of girls didn't even know what he looked like. So I got to interview him, and it was a phone interview. And I just called his house. I mean, it was so easy, whereas today I would have to go through, like, 14 publicists and assistants. And so we had a great chat. I wrote up the story. They did this photo shoot and tried to make him look really sexy. And he was shirtless, I remember, on this, like, red couch. And the photo actually turned out so well that Star ended up turning it into a billboard on Sunset.
Wow.
So my first, like, big thing,
That's
which it
amazing.
Wasn't like, it was like an 80-word, you know, blurb, but it was all of a sudden on a billboard.
Right.
So my editor was like,
You're like,
maybe,
I did that.
Yeah.
I did that.
And he was like, maybe she knows what's going on, even though it wasn't really my idea. So that was sort of my first, I never planned to get into celebrity journalism or sort of covering celebrities or anything like that, but that was sort of like the start of what was to come.
That's crazy. And you've done a lot of red carpet events,
yes.
I assume.
Yes.
What was like one of your favorite celebrity encounters or favorite interviews?
So I counted one time that I had interviewed over 300 celebrities, which was just insane because I did this for like over 10 years for InStyle and Style.com and some places. So I would cover, you know, award shows and Oscars, Grammys, whatever you can think of. And at these events, sometimes you'd meet like 40 people and do all these interviews. So it was very
And it's quick. It's
quick.
Like it's almost like a high school reunion. You're like, hey, what's going on?
So quick. So it's really rare when you get to really connect with somebody.
Right.
So I was covering this charity event for St. Jude, which is a children's hospital.
Yeah,
so
the
very
cancer
serious.
Hospital, right?
Yeah. So it was kind of just weird that I was even there and they gave me a comp seat and I was sitting at this table with Dylan McDermott and like the cast of The Practice, and I'm just this like 25-year-old, you know, who's living in this dumpy one-bedroom apartment. I mean, it was just wrong on all levels. And the seat next to me was open, and I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder who's coming to this seat, right? And so I'm kind of sneaking over to look at the place card, like, because I can see there's a name,
right?
And once I get a look, I just felt inside like I was going to pass out.
Seacrest.
Who was it?
Seacrest.
It was John Ritter.
Oh wow.
Who I
Three's
was
Company.
Obsessed with as a kid.
Two.
Three's Company. And this was kind of before his comeback with the 8 Simple Rules.
Right.
So he wasn't the one, I'm sure people thought, like,
well,
I
he had just
more...
probably done Sling Blade, right?
Yes, that was actually,
that
yeah, that was his thing. And he was kind of coming back.
He got nominated for that,
the
I believe.
Show coming
he?
Up. Yeah, he was so good. And
he was so good.
He
so
walked
good.
In and he was the kindest person. I mean, forget being John Ritter. He was just the kindest person. And we sat through this 3-hour.
Just gave me chills. You get another one of those.
But the best part was, you know, at the end, I just remembered something and I decided to share it with him because he had been really friendly to me and really kind. And so I told him, you know, when I was 5 years old, I actually got your autograph, which is true.
What?
Yes. So this was like a very full circle moment. So he said, oh, do you remember what I wrote on it? And I said, yes, you said, because it was this 8x10 glossy.
Was he doing like the full on hand on the.
Absolutely. It was the height of Three's Company. And it said, Dear Victoria, love to ye from me, John Ritter. So I always remembered that, and so I told him that. So he laughed, and he said, oh, yeah, that's what I used to sign in those days. So then I got up, and I was saying bye to some people, and I came back, and he had taken his place card with his name and written another message, and he said, Dear Victoria, at last we meet again. More love to ye from me, John Ritter.
Dude, that is awesome. That is awesome.
Amazing.
Dude, and he's like one of the most iconic like comedians Absolutely. Of that era too. Absolutely. You know what I mean?
I mean, the
like I grew up on, you know, you grew up with Three's Company reruns going on like crazy.
Absolutely.
It's hard to find now. But that show was so at the peak.
Well, it wouldn't work now.
Like, oh, well, I don't know. Some of those things are still timeless. You know,
but I'm just saying the situation that comedy wouldn't play now.
Like, right. Things have loosened up.
Well, he has to pretend he's gay. Right. Like, right. Girl, women. Like it just like the situation of the comedy wouldn't work. And the landlord like can't have a guy living with two girls, and then tons of gay jokes. I mean, it's just like.
But there are some episodes of Three's Company, like when he's like a Shogun chef. Have you ever seen that one? Dude, there's some episodes where I was like, man, it wasn't even about the storyline. It was just like he was so good at being obnoxious.
Oh, he was amazing.
Like
his physicality.
Exactly.
And you could tell he was just a nice guy, and he really was. And so it was great to see him have the success. And then it was so sad when he passed away.
Yeah.
I actually reached out to his wife and just sent a letter just about what that night meant to me. Because it was so sweet. And, you know, you get very jaded when you cover celebrities because
right, especially the angle that tell us about that a little bit. Like, I know that's not something that most people know about like from your perspective, right. But tell us about that angle, what it's like for you.
Well, I would say that, you know, sometimes it's better not to meet people you really love, and I'm sure you guys have all met people, and then there's other people who just shock the hell out of you, and they're so kind. And, you know, I would say the biggest stars like Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise, you know, these total pros, I mean, they're just a pure pleasure. Just make the job easy. They know why they're there. They know why you're talking to them. The only person I really ever had, and I actually put this into my book because I just wanted like an ounce of revenge, was Jake Busey, was just a total dick to me.
Was that Gary Busey's kid?
Busey's son. And he's, I don't even know what he's doing now, but he was just very
He's
rude.
Not doing much. Don't worry. And, he's available if you want to cast him in your movie.
And so it would always be like the C-list fourth person down on whatever reality show. You know, that was the person who couldn't behave themselves.
Well, because they're the angry ones.
Absolutely.
What does Tom Hanks have to be upset about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
But I would say, you know, it was a very fun ride. And when you're young and you're hungry, and I learned everything because I had to ask Robert De Niro questions about, like, what are you doing for the holidays? And, you know, how did you spend your weekend? And, you know, he just gives you this look like he's going to kill you or something. I mean, so it's once you've survived that, it's sort of like
you're not scary to
go talk to anybody.
Right.
So it's great training ground. But I would say things have changed a lot. Like, I got out before TMZ and all the really aggressive, like, gotcha stories and outing people. And, I only did positive pieces. I mean, we were just covering events. And
yeah, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah.
But did they tell you, like, to ask him this?
Yeah, sometimes. Like, I had a really awkward night where I had an interview with Cameron Diaz at the Chateau Marmont, and it was the day they announced that she and Justin Timberlake had broken up.
Oh.
So the publicist is like, you know, you can't ask anything about that. But, of course, my editor's calling going, that needs to be all you're asking about. So I had to just, you know, stick to my personal compass and just go with what I felt was appropriate in the moment.
So did you ask?
No, I did not ask.
You got a good heart. That's good. That's good.
No, but the story that I retired on in terms of celebrities was a cover story on the Kardashian sisters.
Oh, wow.
And they were actually very sweet. I mean, I have nothing against them, but the teams around them and the layers to go through to get to Kim or to get to Kourtney and Khloe. It's
Ryan Seacrest, just so you know.
Back to Ryan.
It all comes back to you.
I just thought, you know, let me just go out on this one. And so I did.
So was that like a tipping point? Like, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah, I was done. And like, I've never,
this is as bad
never
as
talked to a celebrity again.
There's no going up for me.
Well, it probably changes the way you look at them completely. You know, it's
you
like.
You just see the whole, just like
the
you.
Bullshit
like,
side.
If you're touring with, you know, you've played with huge acts, like. You know, you see that they're just people. I mean, they put on pants. I mean, they do all the same
some
things.
Of them do.
Some. Not Lenny Kravitz. but, you know, you just kind of see the whole behind the scenes, and it's definitely not as glamorous as anyone at home would think or anyone reading us weekly.
Well, I feel like there's so many people, like, outside of the city that subscribe to that,
yes.
you know, that gossip.
Like,
yes. That's your main thing. Like, when you live in the city, it's like, oh, yeah, that's not a big deal. But
yeah.
everybody feels like they're outside looking in.
So absolutely.
That's the demographic of your, you know, clientele of
yeah.
people that are buying the subscriptions.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I went to a bachelorette party last night, which I know is kind of weird for a Monday, but we all are self-employed. So
wow,
we just did it on a Monday.
Yeah, that's an odd
that's smart.
And so we're crossing the street, and Dustin Hoffman's walking the other way. And it's like no one's fazed because it's like,
right.
yeah, we're in Brentwood, and there's Dustin Hoffman. But I still do get excited. I mean, there are certain people. I just saw Larry David on Broadway a few months ago, and I
awesome.
Was, like, losing my mind. I mean, I just adore
well, he's
him.
Also a writer, so you admire him
yeah,
for a different thing. Than you admire him for the things that you love to do. I
right.
think that's where it comes from. Because you'll see celebrities in this city all the time, and it's like, oh, yeah, there's so-and-so.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal. But when you see somebody that moves you because they do
right.
what you do, and you've been inspired by that, that's when I get the jitters whenever I meet people. I'm like, I love your guitar playing. Teach me.
Absolutely. I mean, when you respect someone, it, you know, it adds that layer. But when you're working or when, you know, when I was working, covering them, I mean, you really have to keep it separate. I mean, I talked to Snoop one time and you think I didn't want to go over like every song and tell him every funny story
right,
I
right.
had about being at a show at the House of Blues. And but it was like, no, we're just, you know, it's just
shooting the
it
shit.
Professional. Yeah.
Was he high? Or was that when his phase where he was
I
like,
I think he was high.
I'm not going to smoke pot anymore.
No, I think he was high.
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
he's high. Now, you also did like a whole blogging thing for a
yeah,
while, right? Tell
I
me
had
what
a,
that transition
yeah,
was
Yeah,
like.
My girlfriend Jessica and I had this really funny blog called My Very Worst Date. And we don't have it anymore, but it was user-submitted stories of just about their absolute
I still
worst
owe
date.
You a story,
yeah.
for the record. You gave me a look like, I remember. I'm like, I remember too.
You tell me you were sending a story.
So I've had a few.
We've all had a few. And it was hilarious. And the funny thing with that was when I ended up meeting my now husband and we were getting serious, his mom actually thought all the stories on the site were my stories.
Oh, my God.
And
oh
there
my
were like
God.
200 stories. And I couldn't believe that she was,
it was
still so nice
hell
to me.
You're
She's like, seriously, this is the woman you want to marry?
Yeah. So it was. She looked really relieved when I told her that only two of them were mine. But, yeah, we had great
You didn't
stories.
Tell her which two, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, that's smart.
We'll leave
smart.
That a mystery. But yeah, they were all anonymous, and so it was just really fun, and we had guys and girls that just, you know, it was just a great place to, you thought you had a bad date last night, but then you go read the site, you're like, oh,
like,
that
oh,
was a two.
That was nothing.
Yeah.
So tell us about what inspired the book. I mean, you had all these experiences, obviously,
yeah.
doing red carpet events and being mm-hmm. a journalist. Like, how did you, like, writing for a magazine or writing for a newspaper or even, a, you know, any kind of publication, it's a totally different bag. Like, this
it
is
seems
now
like a
complete...
lot less writing than a novel.
Well, it is, but it's also like, you know, yeah, like when you do a novel, it's like that's a huge collection of thought. Like you're like you have a vision.
Yes.
So tell me how you came up with like how you formulated that vision. What was the seed?
Right.
How it grew and how it developed.
Yeah. So I've wanted to write a novel my whole writing career, but you know, I was terrified. And you know, just like what you mentioned, I mean, when I would write for magazines or newspapers, you're talking like 800 words, 1200 words. I could do that in an hour, 2 hours. Writing a book, it's like 85,000 words.
Yeah.
And you have to have, you know, plot and structure and developing characters. And I mean, it's just so much more involved. So I knew I needed something that I could really
sink your teeth into,
just, you know, work on it for years, know that I wouldn't get sick of it. So I was sort of waiting for the right story. And I was with a girlfriend downtown at Perch, and we were just meeting for drinks. And she walked in, and she looked like she had seen a ghost. And she told me this crazy story that unfortunately I can't tell you too much because there's a little,
oh, come on.
Little like crumb of it in the book.
All right, we won't call the cops.
So she told me this story, and it was about this married man she had had an affair with when she was young. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. Like, I went home, and I just thought about it, and the next day. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, I think this is the book. Now, her story, which just loosely inspired a scene in the book, that was probably 20 pages of it. I still had to come up with the other 314
right,
pages.
Right,
so,
right.
So I decided to make the character loosely based on me in the sense of a red carpet, you know, reporter and an
right.
aspiring journalist.
Well, it's because it's what you know.
It's what I
know. Right, what you
it's
know.
The same way like John Grisham might make his characters all attorneys.
So
you know,
so
it's
you,
just
you
easier.
Just took that one scene and extrapolated
yes, exactly.
front and back
yes.
and made a story.
Yes, and I was also inspired, you know, in our culture today, unfortunately, we have this phenomenon called revenge porn, which is...
Eddie knows that way
all too well. All too well.
And I...
Just kidding.
All too well.
So I thought, you know, I really want to do something with this because it's actually like a really sad and serious subject.
Right.
But I thought I want
to Depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah, exactly. And so kidding. I really wanted to do something with that too. And so I was able to sort of tie the two things together. And it's also just a love letter to LA. If you live in this city, there's a lot of little insider things.
I love that part of the story because you're from LA.
Yes.
You grew up in Irvine, right?
I did.
And you're like an LA child. You're like one of the few.
Yeah, 17 years this month, which I can't believe.
That's insane.
I mean, it's insane.
So I love that you actually put those things about LA in the story because not many people do that.
Like, no, my editor.
Make it geographical.
Yeah, you know, most of the editors are in New York and the agents and the publishers. And so I was, you know, terrified turning in the first draft to my editor. And she wrote back and her one biggest note was, I want to see more of LA. Like, she really wanted that insider stuff. So she's like, you know, talk about In-N-Out, talk about the Getty, talk about, you know, whatever the observations. And so I didn't want to go too stereotypical and have like, oh, they went on a date to the Hollywood Bowl, you know, it was, there's just a lot of inside things that if you live here, you will wink and nod and laugh.
Right.
And, you know, it's, LA is sort of underrepresented when it comes to this type of fiction. It's very popular in crime novels and things like that, but not.
You're also very observational. So
yes.
I know the things are going to be subtle, but like, also if you know the city, like if you're from LA or you live here, then you're like, huh, yeah, I get that.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I put in early in is the characters, Georgina, who's my protagonist, and she falls for this foreign correspondent, Simon, they're chatting on their sort of first date, and she talks about this game she plays, which is Weather Girl or Porn Star, because, you know, if you look at the...
Eddie plays the same games.
I don't know if they're called meteorologists, because I don't know if they are, but if you look at the weather...
I don't think you have to be to work here.
The weather women on our local news, they literally look like they're going out to the club.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's the full Kardashian
Shortest skirts.
Well, why else would you watch weather here? It's the same night. It's the same thing every night.
It's Fritz Coleman, you know?
Right.
So I get it that it's, you know, this is goes on in sports and other fields, too.
It's sunny and 80 every day.
But those are the kinds of things that are very unique to LA. Like, when you're out in Idaho or wherever, I mean, you do not see women like
this. But the funny thing is, it's like, as I travel to other cities, I'm starting to see the trend. Because LA and New York are really the trendsetters in this country, especially for media, entertainment, anything like that. So what I'm seeing is like, oh, they're doing it. We need to be doing that too. And
Absolutely.
It's like, oh God, this is bad.
And it's part of the celebrity influence as well. Because
All
these reality shows like Real Housewives and the Kardashian Empire, all of a sudden hair extensions, like everyone's wearing them.
Wow.
Everyone wants glam squads and hair and makeup for things. And that's not how it used to be. You know, even if you look at the wedding industry, that's all driven by celebrity weddings.
Right.
It was never
and
like that.
And all the reality
before.
Shows.
Yes, like, absolutely.
Now anybody can almost be famous. So they're just like, that. There's
absolutely.
A whole
There's just
scene.
An obsession with fame. And I don't know like how much further we can go with it before hopefully we just turn around and go back the other way.
So I got to ask you a question about your friend telling you about this affair.
Yes.
And like it all of a sudden like lightning struck.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens to me as a musician, like if you're telling me something that I'm like, I need to write a song about this.
Right.
I'm barely listening to you. You know, I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm already piecing this together. Like when she was telling you this thing, were you just like, I have to, was your inner voice going, you need to go home and write about this?
Yes. I actually, when I left her, I got my car and I actually wrote myself an email because I just, even though I knew I wasn't going to forget, I just wanted to research something she had mentioned. And so I did, and then I ended up talking to some girlfriends who I trust, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to write about an affair. Do you think that, like, would you not read that? Like, because, you know, you have some friends, they're so black and white about everything, so it's like, oh, if he cheated on me, you know, we're getting divorced. And I've heard so many friends say things like that, and I think life is really more in the gray areas,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's very hard to
This is why we get along, Victoria.
Yeah. And I'm not pro one or the other. It's just, you know, it's not realistic. I'm not sure about monogamy for life. I just, you know, I'm married and I'm doing, you know.
Tim, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
You know, Tim and I talk about it all the time and just.
No, that's the best.
Know,
it's you have to be open.
Be open, be communicative. But I talked to some girlfriends and I was shocked to hear that like four or five women I knew had also had affairs with married men.
Wow.
And these were girls I've been friends with for a long time and they'd never mentioned it before. So I think they felt like they could open up to me because I was doing this book. And so
research.
I collected a lot of research,
Mm.
And it was interesting because the women who had the affairs are some of the most like highly intelligent, creative, and successful women.
Yeah, but you can't control that. I mean, it's emotional. There's so much stuff that happens.
I think that they were maturing faster than the men in their lives,
you
know? And so these affairs happened when they were young and the guys were older. And I think we can all you know, relate to something like that.
Eddie's had a lot of older men in his life. Just kidding.
I gotta beat him off.
The funny thing is, you think girls just talk too. Right. You know what I mean? Right. So it's like guys would probably, I don't know, it's kind of mixed. It's a mixed bag if they would openly talk about having an affair. I think most likely.
Guys don't talk as much as girls.
Well, that's what you think, but apparently they do.
Girls talk way more than guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, I had one girlfriend tell me about an affair she had while she was married, and this, I knew her husband, and that was a horrible place to be in,
right, because you know,
I just didn't know what to do, and right, I didn't tell him, and you know, I think it's really tough.
You can't. It's not your business. Really, like, tough. Yeah. You know, but you're like, something's not. Yeah. Something's not.
I just figured they probably weren't going to work out, so it wasn't worth.
Well, did you throw in any details from any of your friends' stories?
I did.
That's spicy. You're good, Victoria. You're good.
No, I mean, anyone who knows me, you know, should probably read the book just to make sure, you know, make sure they're portrayed in the right way. No, I mean, it is.
Have your girlfriends all read the book?
A lot of my girlfriends have. You know, some of them are new moms,
scared,
and
right,
yeah, and
right,
so they're like texting me, like, "Oh my gosh, I need to take a cold shower," because there's a lot of steamy sex scenes, and you know, it's portrayed very hot. And right, so I just had this fear last week when, you know, I was at my book reading at Book Soup. I was like, "Oh my god, is this book going to encourage people to have affairs?" Because Simon in the book is 42, which is very similar to the age that like a lot of my guy friends are at now. And right, so I wouldn't, you know, necessarily want them to go have an affair with a 22.
Well, but I mean, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but it's a timely thing too.
It is.
You know, you have the 50 Shades of Grey. You have the TV show The Affair.
Yes.
You have
which I love.
There's a TV show too that I'm blanking on. That is also like an affair.
Well, like Scandal.
Scandal.
Kerry Washington's having an affair with the president, Tony Goldwyn. And, you know, I was watching Scandal and I was watching The Affair, and all these things I think definitely had an influence. And it's funny because I have started getting reviews, and, you know, you look at Amazon and nobody has mentioned that they don't like The Affair. I mean, I think that it is complicated. And so you don't know, like, are you rooting for them? Or are you disgusted by it?
No, it's human nature, though. There's part of
it's gray.
It's part of that area, like you said, the gray area. So it's like, it's beautiful, actually, that you kind of are so honest about some of the things that you're throwing into, you know, the juice
of
the book.
Well, I never personally wanted to get married. I mean, if you ask my family or any of my friends, they're all shocked that I'm married. I mean, I was just very against it. And I think it's...
Why is that?
Well, I think from a young age, I never... It just didn't seem like... How do you do that? How do you just sleep with one person your whole life? And I just seen so many divorces around me, and like my parents are still together, you know, after 40 plus years, which is amazing, but that's not, you know, the norm, and they still hold hands.
Different generation too.
Total
my parents are like
generation.
That too.
Yeah. And so I wasn't sure. And also I just, you know, dating in LA, like it was exhausting and terrifying.
There's Eddie, you never had to do that, right?
Mm-mm.
Dating in LA, it is like a phenomenon like no other.
It is. I mean, it led me to start comics. A blog. Yeah, I mean, it's like...
It's a constant enigma. It is the Rubik's Cube of life in the biggest way. It's just very weird. It's very strange.
And I think my husband felt the same. So when we were dating, it was okay because that pressure was sort of off. But then after a few years, you know, it was cute because I remember we were in the car and we were talking just about our future. And he had said something like... You know, just calling you my girlfriend just does not seem to describe, you know, what I feel about you. And so then all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, are
wait a minute.
Not getting
what
married?
Are you doing?
And so then I actually started liking that idea. Right. And I think I just needed to grow up. I think I was just a late.
It's time. Like passage of time.
It's just like you get, there's a stigma. Like once you get past the stigma, like I'm married, and like it's not like that. If you're with someone you enjoy being with.
Absolutely. And I just told a reporter the other day, they said something like, oh my gosh, you know, how does your husband handle this? And what does he feel about you doing this? And I'm thinking,
he's probably into it.
My husband is
the... this scene is so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, not only is he supportive, but my relationship is the easiest part of my life.
Right.
You know, I mean, work and traffic and maintaining our house and the garden and the possums we're trying to catch and all this stuff. It's like, the relationship is the easy part. So I think if you're with the right person, it's fine. But
it shouldn't be work.
It's not always the case.
It takes. It was give and take to it, but it shouldn't be work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's balance. It brings balance to all parts of your life.
Absolutely.
Plus, you don't want to be like 75. Like, hey, you want to go to a movie?
I know.
Dude, if you do that phase, I'm never going to say yes.
You're cute. You want to go out sometime? Like, no one.
No, it's true. It's true.
No, it's so true. And I always say that to him because I was nervous on Friday night because I read at Book Soup, which is my favorite bookstore.
That is one. I saw that you were doing a, like, that must be exciting.
It was huge. I mean, it's like for you playing, you know, your favorite venue.
Yeah.
Do you just read excerpts from the book or do you read the whole?
No, I just read an 8-minute excerpt and then people ask questions.
Did you read the sexy part?
I did.
Yeah.
And then the funniest part was my realtor's kids walked in who are not old enough for the book. Mm. So I was literally like self-editing as I was reading.
You're like, what do I do now?
Yeah. So,
You're like, let me take it from let's get a rated G part of the book.
Absolutely.
Were there kids in the store? Because there's a lot of kids there.
Just these two. And they were okay. But I had a 14-year-old boy approach me at a different event, and he said, I bought your book, and I'm going to read it. And I said, no. I said, I need to talk to your mom. And so he brought his mom over, and she said, oh, he can handle it. And I said, no. He can't. I don't feel comfortable.
You said no?
I said no. And I said, could you read it first and then you decide? And so she's
smart.
Like, okay, maybe. I just didn't want to get, whatever.
She probably gave
it to me. Go ahead and read it.
I mean, I know kids, you know.
She's probably having an affair, so.
Kids
she's
like... today. I mean, the books I used to read, and you'll know this book. Pamela DeBar, like, I'm with the band. It was about being a groupie.
I didn't
that was
I
like
that
the first book.
Book
I ever read when I was
I just lived that book.
11 years
kidding.
Old, you know. So, and I turned out, you know, somewhat fine. So I think
you did.
It's probably
you did.
Okay for someone to read my novel, but it is racy. I mean, there's a few very sexy scenes.
What was the biggest, like, obstacle with writing this book? I mean, besides the length and just having taken that whole thing on, there's always points, I think, that you would just want to stop.
Yes.
You know? So what was like the big obstacle for you?
I think, you know, I always knew the plot that I was going to...
I missed.
That I was going to work with. But so I had my beginning, middle, and end. But I think the hardest part was just connecting it all together.
Right.
So I would go through these spurts where I could write like 50 or 80 pages. Or one time we were in Hawaii and I wrote the whole ending just in like the morning while Tim was still sleeping. And I was just out there typing away, you know, like crazy. And there were just parts where, you know, like my editor would say, I would really love you to, expand this scene by 20 pages. And you're like... No, I didn't have that in my head.
Right.
You know?
Pages.
That's tough,
yeah,
too.
So it's kind of tough to just invent that. And it's like there's only so much inspiration you can take from your friends and your life. And, you know, at some point you're writing fiction. So there are characters that are just completely invented out of nowhere that are not based on anyone. And so you just really have to do that work. And so what I would do is I would sit and think like, okay, what's this person's name? You know, where were they born?
That's what I also wanted to ask. How did you come up with Georgina as your main
protagonist? Okay, so Georgina Park, she's named because my dad's name is George.
Okay.
And he didn't really put that together when he first read the book. But I wanted to do something for him because I dedicated the book to my mom. So it was just kind of like a sweet, cheesy thing.
Oh, that's cool.
But also I wanted her to have a name that was unusual because she, like me, is part Korean and part white, and so I just wanted her to have something that she was just a little different, and her race and identity is not a part of the book. It's not really, you know, a part of the story, but I wanted to have a protagonist who was part Asian because when I was growing up, I never read anybody who was like me. So I just said,
That's
if I
awesome.
Ever write a novel, she's going to be part Asian, and if they don't like that, I'll go to a different publisher. And no one has said a peep. Again, you know,
That's
it's a universally
great.
Relatable
story. Well,
because
your writing's awesome. I mean, Eddie doesn't know anything about your writing yet,
right.
And he will read it. But I've grown up in the last like 10 years
right.
reading your blogs, checking out your websites
Thank
and
you.
Stuff like that. And you're an awesome writer. So
Thank
this
you.
The funny thing is to me, when I knew that she had this book published, I'm like, of course, this makes total sense. Like she's writing a novel and she's just finished it and got it published. And now she's doing the rounds. This is like the touring for a writer.
I
That's
am on tour.
Interesting.
I'm
it's,
on a mini
awesome.
Tour that is, you know, in LA and Orange County.
And so you did Book Soup and then
Book
where else
Soup,
did you?
I had a launch party at Fiorentini and Baker in Venice on Abbot Kinney. And
when
that
did,
was amazing.
When did it come out? What was the
It just came out on the 21st of July. So
oh, wow.
it's like
yeah,
two
it was like
weeks
2 weeks
old.
Ago. Yeah.
yeah
so have you already started on the new novel?
No, and that's so funny.
Easy, cracking the whip over
It's all
here,
about what
man.
You've done now.
It Jeez. Is. In fact, my editor said, "Oh, it's a good idea to have your second novel ready,
yeah.
so that when people like the first, you have a second one to sell." And
too
I'm
many
like,
whips going on. Jeez,
dude, you
I'm
go
like,
in with these meetings like, okay, so what else do you got?
Well, you say you have something percolating.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if you have something or not. It's like
anyone,
know.
Feel free to email me ideas for a second novel. I don't.
And he's like, I'm going to take you up on that.
I don't, but we're going on a long vacation next month because I need a little break.
Of course.
I'm kind of sick of myself and talking about myself.
But this is the exciting process.
It is. It's
like you see the print, You see the cover. It's like, oh my God, this is happening.
Holding the
You're
book.
Doing a little yes. tour like of all kinds of bookshops mm-hmm. and especially your favorite ones. You're at another book reading this
yes.
weekend,
so,
right?
So on Sunday at 5 o'clock in Orange County, I'm going to be at Environment at SoCo Collection, which is in Costa Mesa right off the 405.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you can go to my website, victorianamkung.com.
Spell it out. Spell it out letter by letter.
VictoriaNamkung.com/novel, and all the details are there. And anyone's welcome to come. I'm just going to be discussing the book in a really informal setting. There's going to be wine. There's going to be some light bites.
Are you going to do any like racy reading?
It's going
to
be
yeah.
A
I'll read. I'll have to see you know the age of who turns up. But yeah, if everyone's over 18, I'll read.
How did you choose that? Scene. Like when you did the readings, like yeah. did you know ahead of time? You're well, like, this is a good scene to read.
I needed to read something from the first half because the second half turns into a thriller, sort of like a Gone Girl type psychological thriller. So
awesome.
I didn't want to spoil anything, so I read something from the earlier part of like when they first meet and they go up to this hotel room and have their first encounter.
Wow.
Well, somebody told me, I was asking authors advice on like, what do you read? You know, what's the best thing to read? And I go to a lot of readings and I know, you know, it can get boring and you're sitting in like uncomfortable wooden chairs and stuff. So I asked someone and they said, always read Sex Over Death. So I thought, okay, I'll just read the first sex scene. And so I did.
That's what they told you?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That makes sense.
I think we're
sex
in this,
sells.
Like, sex
Death
sells.
Doesn't sell.
Sex sells.
Sex sells. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Absolutely, and it's true because I have to say the women's response to this novel has been really incredible. And
that's what you want, though.
It is.
It's like, and
it
like
is.
You know what? Something like a 50 Shades of Grey. The guys start paying attention because the girls start.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like, it's the same thing with music. You want girls showing up to your
Absolutely.
Gigs, then the dudes will show up because the girls are there too. You
it's,
know,
it's very true, and you know, women. Are the majority buyers of fiction. It's just a fact. And so women are like 78%.
I think
buyers.
Women read way more than
they
men.
Do.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Do.
That's
I've
true.
Had men come up to me at these events and they just say, I don't read, but I bought your book.
Yeah, that would be most men. I don't read, but you have sex.
Eddie
with,
reads
so
comics,
gonna,
so.
Read this.
This is going to be a lot about, of big words for Eddie.
You talk about titties. I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you one thing, too. When you are reading the scenes for these, you know, the readings, they're kind of like your trailers.
It is a trailer.
So do you kind of jump around and kind of, do you talk about the premise or?
Yeah,
you know?
I just sort of introduce the book, like what it's about in case they have no idea. Because there were some strangers at the events who just sort of wandered into the store.
And they so wander in the middle of the reading,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they don't know anything. So you do have to sell it. And I'm not a performer. Like, I'm not an actress. I'm not a musician, you know. So it's a little different just being the one in the spotlight after covering everyone else for so many years.
Well, you deserve
but,
it. Come on.
Yeah, it's time.
That's why you're here.
It's
you
definitely
deserve it.
Time. And it's been really fun. And people have been so kind. But yeah, so I just read an excerpt. I didn't jump around. I might jump around a little more at the next one just to kind of experiment
yeah.
with it.
Do you have a hardcover of the book?
No,
it's
just
paperback.
Yeah, and I have an ebook, so it's on Kindle and Nook and all the e-reader devices. And a lot of people are doing e-readers now. Like, I still love print, and I have way too many books at home.
Do you want a hardback? Is that is like to a writer? Is like a hardback, like sort of like having a vinyl to a musician.
It is, but I didn't care. Like when I heard that it was just going to be paper. A lot of times now, like with debut authors, they don't want to take the chance on the hardback.
Why is it? Because of the cost?
It's more expensive.
Oh wow!
And also, it's easier for me to sell it because it's at a lower price point. Like on Amazon, it's like $13.50.
Right.
So that's not too bad. And then you can also order signed copies from my site for $15. So it's
that's
nice.
Amazing. Wait, hold on. I want you to plug your site again.
Okay.
That is amazing that you take the time to sign these copies.
Oh, yeah. I've been signing every day. In fact, someone came up to me at Book Soup and they said, will you sign two copies? I said, I'll sign your whole body. Like, this is so new for me.
I hope that wasn't the 14-year-old boy.
No. I will sign anything. If anyone buys my book, I will talk to you for as long as you want. You can email me. We can be friends.
Victoria signed my copy. I want to just call out AJ Sicasio, who has my copy in his apartment right now. AJ, you need to give me the copy that I've asked you to get me for like 2 weeks. But anyways,
yeah.
Go on.
So yeah, so if anyone wants a signed copy, which, you know, some people just like to have that and I'll personalize it or write
and that's
it.
Rare
like, yeah
you don't
I'll write
get
it to your wife
all the time.
I'll write it to your friend whoever yeah just go to victorianamkung.com and PayPal it and I'll send it off to you.
And one of my last questions, you were obviously pitching this to publishers.
Yes.
Like, how did you feel about the relationship with the publisher, like mm-hmm. how they were going to, because a lot of publishers change the books. They'll change the stories.
Oh, yeah. So I was terrified of that because I was just convinced that it was going to be like an unrecognizable manuscript. And so I opted to go with a really small Amazon-owned publisher, which is very controversial because indie bookstores hate Amazon. So it was amazing that BookSoup would even let me read there because right. Amazon is the reason their that nemesis. So many bookstores are shuttering and closing. Even Barnes & Noble's, you know, can't compete with Amazon. Right. So I wanted more control, so I went for a smaller deal, a smaller, you know, sort yeah. of fee. I could have
build
waited.
It slow.
Yeah,
build
I could
it
have
slow.
Waited, like pitched another 2 years and gotten Simon & Schuster, gotten St. Martin's Press. But I have friends who are authors at those huge houses, and they don't get very much attention, and there's right. no real marketing support.
You,
so,
did you have to make any compromises, like really, that you regret
no,
making?
No, I really
no, you
didn't.
Pretty much got
like,
out of your head
so
what you wanted.
I'm so happy. And I had control over the cover. I had final say on the cover.
That's awesome.
And, you know, the cover,
it's beautiful.
They say don't
it's
judge
beautiful.
A book by its cover, but we all judge a book by the cover. And
I like the, like it's
this.
Water, right?
It's water. And ocean that's, is a huge theme in the novel because it's set in Santa Monica.
Is that hair coming up from a drain?
It is hair coming up.
Oh!
Not necessarily a drain.
Crazy!
But it's sort of a feeling of like what lies beneath the surface.
Oh, I got that. I mean, I got that because really I didn't even notice this. I thought this was just like ambiguous.
It is.
You know,
it can be
artistic
you
stuff.
Want. Yeah.
But I got that from the water line. Yeah. It's, you only see
the. Yeah, these, are definitely, these like, definitely aren't pubes.
Easy, Eddie. Jeez.
Yeah, shout out to my cover designer, Eric Wilder, who is amazing, and he translated my vision into this beautiful cover. So, yeah, just seeing it come to life, I have no complaints. I got to select the fonts. Like, I'm very happy.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, you don't think about those things. But it's the details.
It's the details.
That make it like such a beautiful experience.
Like I'm sure if you're doing music or Eddie's doing comedy, like you don't want some outside person who doesn't know you
yep.
doing your artwork, doing right. your logo, doing your marketing. Like it's very weird and I'm like
well, it's
a total
personal
control
when you
freak.
Do
yeah.
it. When you like you have your own stamp on that.
Absolutely.
It's like, and you know what's the shitty part of it? It's like kind of a thankless job. You know what I mean? Like
totally.
You do all that work to all those details and people may not even pay attention to those
it's
things.
True. It's
but
true.
Now they will because they'll now hear they this will. Radio show and they'll be like, she chose the font. That'll be people's selling point. Hey, you should read this book. She actually chose the font.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. Somebody wrote to me and said, I really like your chapter numbers. And that was something I never even thought
that's
about.
Awesome.
I've never paid attention to a chapter number, but that somebody even said that, it was just like so awesome.
That is amazing.
Oh yeah, I do like your chapter numbers.
Thanks.
Hey, easy. They're get very, a room, you two.
They're very big. Very
they
big
are
chapter
very
numbers.
Big.
Victoria, I expect huge, huge, huge things.
Thank you.
From this book and every book after. I can't wait for you to come back.
Thank
you.
You
are an amazing guest. You've been an amazing fan and supporter of my music. And now Eddie's comedy, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Oh, I will go to wait. Eddie's show. Anytime.
See? Just like that. See? Like a match made in heaven. Mm. No, really. One more time, I want you to tell us where you're going to be this weekend and
okay.
give us your website and
okay.
tell us what the book is called. This is The Things We Tell Ourselves.
Yes.
I wanted to say it once, but go ahead.
Okay, so my novel is The Things We Tell Ourselves. It's on Amazon. It's on all the e-reader sites, iTunes, iBooks. You can just Google it. You'll find it. And this Sunday, I will be discussing my novel and doing some signing at Environment at SoCo Collection in Costa Mesa,
yeah,
5
yeah.
to 7 p.m. You can just come. You can just show up. It's totally free.
It's going
to
be steamy.
To the public. And again, my website is Victoria Namkung, which is VictoriaNamkung.com. And everything you've ever wanted to know about the book is there, including a Spotify playlist.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is all the songs that are mentioned in the book. And that was one of the most fun parts, just putting that together. It was,
that's awesome.
You made a soundtrack for your book.
I did.
I've never heard of that. That's
I know.
Amazing.
I just thought it would be fun.
Details. It's all about the details.
It is. So,
Victoria, you're going to kick ass with this book.
You.
I can't wait to sink my own teeth into this.
I really
and
appreciate
I hope everybody listens, everybody who is listening, gets a copy of The Things We Tell Ourselves, and you can tell us all about it. On behalf of Eddie Pence, I'm Nikki Carulla. We'll see you here next week.
Good night.
Thank you.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.